So I reiterate here, the bill is dead.
The story of this great city is about the years before this night.
Welcome to Ho Ho Hong Kong. I am Andy Curtin.
And I am Vivek Mabubani.
You can find me online at Andy Curtin on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
And you can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube and stuff. Just look for at Funny Vivek with the letter M sometimes. Try both.
Yeah, that sounds like that's not the first time you've said that.
Yeah, exactly. Perfectly said.
If you are enjoying the pod, please do us a massive favor and subscribe on any platform that's good. iTunes is probably the best, but the algorithms, it helps us, you know, improve in search rankings if you give us, if you can subscribe, and ratings and reviews are really helpful as well.
Yeah, it's just a click away. I mean, you have a keyboard, use it. Type something nice, click the submit button, and click the 5 stars.
So today we thought it would be a good thing to talk about the reopening of Hong Kong, which is happening now. Last weekend, bars open, things are starting to go back to whatever the new normal is. Mm-hmm. We're going to cover how does it compare to SARS, which obviously I can't comment on that, but
yeah,
you'll be able to talk about
it. I went through
it,
so I can tell you all about it.
There's been this sort of myth that Hong Kong's been in a lockdown, which it's not true. It's never been in a lockdown.
Not an official one.
So we'll talk about what it's really been like. We'll cover why I hate Backstreet Boys cruise ships. What does the reopening look like? You know, what's going on the ground here? And all, there are so many crazy measures that businesses are doing to make themselves safe. And I think it's good to look at it because this might be what the rest of the world looks like soon.
Yeah, and speaking of all these declarations, I do declare this will be a great episode.
So things are starting to open up a little bit.
Yeah, finally, you walk down the streets, people are looking at you going, okay.
That's, well, you are.
Well, okay, all right.
Were they doing that before? Yeah.
No, I think actually that's what's changed for me. I was looking at me like half a face. Okay, I'm okay with that. Yeah, full face wasn't so comfortable.
That's tough. The face masks is a tough idea.
Well, now it's summer, man.
This is so sweaty. We got painful facial hair. It's not nice.
Yeah. Well, the facial hair does help a bit. It pushes the face mask away from the face.
I must say, I haven't worn one without facial hair.
So yeah, so we can't really compare. Well, I have half a face of facial hair, so yeah. My chin is comfortable. My nose, terrible.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I have
I'm
to say,
hating it, man.
Yeah,
it's
the heat,
so
right?
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it's tempting. It's tempting to somehow peel the face mask off.
I do it, but I leave the ears on.
Yeah, you do
so
that.
So they think I'm just taking a break.
No, man, I leave it on one ear hanging. That's what I do. Because I'm not folding this and touching my chin and dirtying that. I let it hang off of the edge of my other ear.
Because I can breathe. I was getting, I had to admit this, I was getting pimples. And I'm like, yeah.
Right?
Pressed sweat and like, you know.
The worst feeling is like when, you know, your upper lip, you can feel the droplets of sweat.
Eugh.
And you're like, I need to wipe that off, but I can't. I don't want to touch
that. What a lovely way to start a podcast.
Hey,
right?
Welcome to Ho Ho Hong Kong.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because I don't know the history of why. Because the reason people have dealt with it well.
In Hong Kong.
And people ask me, they're like, oh, why has Hong Kong done so well? The government's done a good job, but the people didn't need to be told what to do.
Well, I think partly because, yeah, like you said, the history. We went through SARS in 2003, and that was tough.
When I was in Australia, right, I was in Australia just as it started to hit. And the news was like, hey, there's a virus here, there's cases, and people didn't know. They didn't understand what to do. There was like an education lag.
Because it was too absurd. You were hearing so much different information, right?
Sure.
On one hand, it's like, oh, it's just like the flu. On the other hand,
it's
like...
And you can't see anything yourself. Like, yeah. The thing is, there's nothing to see. No one else is reacting, so there's no change. It's just a change on the news.
It's really bizarre. It's one of those things where it's like, nah, it would never happen to me. Oh, no, I'm a healthy guy.
Absolutely, yeah. And still, I think that's an issue.
There's still a lot of people. I mean, to be very honest with you, it's like a lot of diseases. You kind of go like, oh, I go to the gym, you know, 3 times a week. Right, I stretch and I'll be fine.
I'm not gonna get cancer.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I'm gonna go have that beer and keep smoking. But you know, I go to the gym, so that's the issue. Now in Hong Kong, though, when we were hit with SARS, that was such a surprising issue, and it was so real because we had, I believe, 299 people who passed away.
Wow.
Because of that, and
wasn't there there was like 42 from one compound?
There was one building that was
Amoy
like
Gardens
Amoy Gardens. Yeah, that
incident.
Was a big one in Kowloon Bay where just like they got quarantined and locked off.
I think it was 142 cases from the same compound.
Yeah.
And 42 of them die. I might not.
I'm not too sure, but it was,
and also about those numbers for
sure. Yeah. And also some doctors passed away, and that was a big deal because it's like, wow, you know, this is not just a matter of.
We thought doctors live forever.
Yeah, right. You gave them an apple a day, they went away and they were fine, but no.
They left themselves alone.
Yeah, exactly. You give them SARS and they're like, all right, bye. But that, so that's the thing. It was like, it was just so shocking. Not that it was just like, you know, getting a cold or a fever. It's just like, you could actually pass away. And this is serious. You could stop breathing and everything. So when that happened, immediately, you know, you had implementations of face masks. Like, I was in university at the time.
I
was still studying.
First year university, second year?
I think I was like, should be second or third year. I was almost
Somebody's
done.
Like,
old. Yeah.
Hey, kids, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
I had just retired when the British came.
Exactly. Get off my fake grass lawn that I don't own, small apartment.
So was there, you understand what I'm saying when I say like an education lag?
Yes.
Do you think that happened to
you? I definitely think so. I think had we not gone through SARS, we'd probably have a similar like, really? I don't know. This is weird. I'll read a little bit into it. Oh, I'll wait it out kind of a thing. But SARS was so in our face. Like it was like, boom. Yeah, this is it. And when we saw this, especially at also the people saying it was coming from China and everything, we're like, this is too similar. It was far similar, airborne, or, you know, it could be passed. Before,
I've heard this song before.
the airborne that's coming from China.
What was that? There's some saying like, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Oh, man.
I'm stealing someone's quote. Like a famous quote.
One day, man, they're going to come to our podcast like, I said that.
Yeah, it was the janitor.
Yeah, and then we're like, did you download the podcast first? Did you subscribe? No? Okay, it doesn't matter now.
That's because that's how we communicate with everyone now.
Exactly. It's all about, are you a subscriber? No? Sorry, sir. Can't be friends.
So was it frequent to see someone wearing a face mask before SARS?
Not really.
You
wouldn't
see
it
around.
It wasn't common.
Because that's such an association with Asia, is the face masks.
So I think that's what's always been absurd. It's always been a thing like you'd see that Asian person on a plane with a face mask on, you know, and people kind of like, oh, what are they hiding? What's going on here?
It's good we have a doctor on the plane.
Yeah, exactly, right? You know, they're ready for surgery if anything happens.
Medical professional.
Yeah, right? This guy, you give him the chicken. He's like, all right, scalpel. You know?
I just don't want to get sick.
Yeah. So I think ever since SARS, it's become, you wouldn't look at someone funny. You would actually look at them going like, all right, so you're wearing a face mask. I'm guessing you're probably not feeling well or you're just being precautious kind of a deal. Rather than like, oh, this guy's weird. Look at this guy. He's trying to be better than us. It wasn't a matter of like, this guy's wearing a face mask because he doesn't trust us. But it's more like this guy's wearing a face mask probably because he's not feeling well.
Interesting.
So that was the mindset.
Because I don't think that's the situation now. It's like there's well over 99% of people wearing face masks.
Oh, in Hong Kong? For sure, yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Now, like, maybe you'll see a couple of people not wearing
you
it.
Will, or else
before there was almost none.
Yeah, I mean, there was a while, I would say 3 weeks ago, that when everyone's like, all right, I think this is the real deal. Because, see, what happened was initially, you still had that lag of the locals, and then the, let's say, the expats or the foreigners who are, let's say, maybe you're still watching overseas news, and you're still reading it out, going like, wait a second, this is a bit too extreme.
And are also, like, arrogant. Overconfident expats.
Yeah, coming. Oh, you can say that. I'm not
you
saying
can
that.
Say it.
No. You still have the few that is still like, oh, come on, guys, this is crazy.
Mate, I had someone. I was having lunch recently, and my friend had a colleague with him, and the guy's like, he's British, and he was like, so oh, people just need to realize, look, it's just like the flu. I'm like, mate, you're stuck in January.
There's
nobody that thinks that anymore.
Yeah. You know? We're way past the flu season.
You missed, you get to read the newspaper.
Exactly. I think that you're absolutely correct. As in, like, a lot of people would read one source, and if it matches, like, you know, that confirmation bias. There's a lot of that. Well, see, this guy says it's the flu. All right, you know what? Never mind.
I think it's a little bit like grieving as well, in that, you know, like the five stages of grief.
Yeah.
It's like you see people are in denial.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or they're bargaining, you know, they're trying to say, oh, am I not as bad as I thought?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the anger part, I mean, that was a whole different game with the government and all that. That's another level.
It's there.
Yeah. But what actually has happened is initially you had people who were cautious, right? People who have experienced SARS probably went to a face mask without a doubt. They were like, boom, done, I'll put it on, no problem. They weren't questioning whether it's effective or not. You know, with the WHO saying this and that, everyone's like, look, I'm wearing the face mask. If it's
they weren't waiting for them. I think that's the difference here is in the West, people are really looking to discount what they're being told as the minimum. Whereas in Hong Kong, people are ahead of the minimum.
Yeah.
They're already like, the government's telling them, you know, you don't have to wear a face mask on the metro anymore.
Yeah.
On the MTR, but people, almost everyone does.
Well, I think, okay, that's twofold. Let's be very fair. Number one, people are extra cautious, just like I said, experience. That really has been a hard lesson when everyone's like, look, will a face mask harm me more than it will help me? No, you know, it won't really harm you too much. All right, I'm wearing a face mask. Will it help me? I can't really be sure, but will it harm me? No? Okay, I'm wearing a face mask. You know, that extra side of caution. At the same time, also, you know, when you don't like the government, when the government says, yeah, don't wear a face mask, you're like, I'm going to wear a face mask now.
They also recently told you to not wear masks, right?
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. And then they gave out masks.
This is the best thing ever.
It's so amazing.
Half a year ago, the government's trying to ban masks.
Not even half a year ago.
Yeah, not even that.
Like,
I know. And then now
ago.
They're like, we have masks to give away to everyone in Hong Kong.
3 months ago, they said nobody is allowed to wear a mask outside. They banned them. And now they're giving out masks to people's houses.
Can I just say, the government really needs to change whichever design firm they've hired to design these masks.
For the CU mask?
Yeah. Oh, man. Let me just say that color shade. I understand you're probably thinking skin tone. Let's use a skin tone, you know. But you must understand, when someone's face is half gone, as in they've not got a nose or a mouth, I kind of don't want to see skin tone.
That's funny. You look like Voldemort.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, it was one of the Mortal Kombat characters. Yeah, every day, like, finish him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I saw that, I'm like, really? Like, you actually want to make it prominent that, yeah, I've got something covering my face now. Not that, look at that guy. I don't see the face mask. It's just blending into his skin.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
And he has no nose or mouth.
Yeah. Interesting. That's a really clean shaved guy.
And he's throwing a spear at me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why does he have four arms?
Well, how did he just freeze me?
Yeah. So face masks were on. Everybody was doing their thing. I think what was interesting, though, that people have misconception is they thought that Hong Kong was in a sort, quote-unquote, lockdown. We were kind of on a quarantine-ish, but not a lockdown. No one was told you're not allowed to leave your house. You know, shops were not told you better shut down initially.
Restaurants have never shut down.
Yeah, they never shut down. But then, I mean, they reduced the services. However, initially,
there were social distancing measures and stuff, but they were always open.
But that was before even the government implemented it. People themselves were putting down, like, for example, I went to a Taiwanese restaurant, and at the door, before any government measures, they're like, temperature check. We're checking you.
So, this is a big thing. It's like, there was no requirement for this.
No.
And almost, you know, most restaurants would do check your temperature before you
exactly.
sat down.
Exactly. And the best thing is, people who were entering the restaurants weren't arguing. They were like, sure, check my temperature.
Because it's reassuring, you know? It's like, it's a way to go, all right, there's been some vetting system for everyone that's in here. I can maybe relax a little bit.
Yes, exactly.
Because it is scary when it's in the community to be out there among people. How different is this run from SARS?
Oh, way different. Way. At least back then with SARS, people still kind of had some faith in the government. And Hong Kong was in such a different state at that time, you know. People did not have, like, there was no big, well, there was kind of a protest, but not as crazy as it is now. However, the Hong Kong wasn't in a state of madness or chaos as it is now. And therefore, when this came out, this was a thing to worry about. Now we're kind of a bit tired, as in, like, we're not.
So from 6 months of protests, the city was already pretty fatigued, and a lot of business was already getting smashed.
Exactly. Many of them, right? And then you have this as well. It's like another sector of business is getting hurt. You know, at least before, okay, so late with the protests, maybe a lot of businesses in certain districts and stuff were getting affected, right? And some people who were for the government were still fine, whatever. Okay, cool. With this was like non-discriminatory. Like, whoever you were, whichever side you were on, this
rich
is going to affect you.
Rich or poor,
exactly. It's an inconvenience on a different level, you know? At least before, let's say you were on the eighth floor of a certain tower in, like, let's say a drinking district. Let's just say, I don't know, LKF, right?
You know? This is hypothetically speaking.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say that I'm throwing it out that there was a comedy club on the eighth floor of California Tower in Lan Kwai Fong, Hong Kong, right? Let's just say. During the protests, you'd still be on the eighth floor doing your show. Things still going on, right? But now with the whole problem with COVID-19 and stuff, people even don't even want to go to your venue.
No way.
Not because they were afraid of going through certain protest crowds and stuff. They're just thinking, I just want to be around people.
Yeah, and the other thing about the protests is it's, you can avoid it very easily.
If you're smart, yeah.
And it's not that hard to go to areas, you know. We were building during the protests, and not once was I unable to come up here.
Exactly. Because you knew the back roads, and you basically learned how to use a map.
Yeah.
Right?
And well, you figured, actually, here wasn't too bad.
Yeah, this area was all right.
Exactly. I got hit by tear gas one time.
Yeah.
On a Thursday afternoon walk. Yeah. in the lobby downstairs. The whole lobby got hit.
Oh, when they were in Central and stuff. Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. When the cops were like, hey, it's lunchtime. Here's a buffet.
Yeah, yeah. Who's hungry?
Yeah. You like your smoked salmon with tear gas? Here you go. It's like, really?
So what do you notice as being the difference then?
Between SARS and this one?
Well, I understand what you're saying. That people
Definitely the speed of getting into the face mask.
Oh, so you think it was just like instant reaction?
Oh, it was fast, man. You could see on the MTR, the train, within like the first week, half the people face masked straight up. You know, then you saw people were not giving you that weird eye, like, look at this guy wearing a face mask. They're like, wait a second, everyone's wearing face masks. Am I missing something?
Yeah.
You know, immediately everyone started suspecting themselves. So what you found the difference was with SARS, people were still a bit like, wait, what's going on? Is this really that bad? This one is like, wait, what am I missing? Why is half the people wearing face masks? Why does she have a glove on? Right? Why do they have...
But that goes back to my point is in Australia, you see this stuff on the news and there's no consequence. Like a visual consequence is a big thing.
Yeah.
To be standing out as a one person not taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Is a lot of social pressure on
people. So put it this way. In Hong Kong, it's really bizarre as in, let's say everyone's wearing a face mask. So I'll give you an example. You're on the MTR train, right? And this one guy walks in without a face mask now. People just walk away. They're not going to yell at him or whatever. They're just like, you know what? I don't have time for this. I'm staying away. I don't know where you've been.
Mate,
what you're
you ever
doing.
Watch someone cough on the MTR?
Oh, it's the craziest moment of your life, right?
If someone coughs on the metro,
yeah, people are like,
just walk away from
them. Yeah, I'm getting off. This is my stop. Thank you. Exactly. And it's really bizarre because, so I had this joke where I used to say before in Hong Kong, when people banged into you and pushed you away, it was really rude. But now it's a sign that they care about you. Because they're like, hey, keep our
distance.
Because
they're willing to touch you.
Yeah, they're like, just for your safety, get away from me, right?
Yeah.
I might be sick. I've been here and been there. So there's that. But I would definitely say the difference is the speed of getting into it and people's willingness to help each other out. I think it was so real that when we first started off and there was a shortage of masks and stuff, when the gum was just
doing toilet paper.
Toilet paper, yeah. But toilet paper was a whole different game. The mask was the one where it was everyone. Toilet paper was like the select crew that just went nuts and think like, I want toilet paper too, right? So the Gold Rush community of toilet paper, they were one group, but the face mask was everyone. And that was where you would see in SARS, there was no such thing as like a face mask shortage. I'd go to university and they would say, you must wear a face mask. Oh, you have a face mask for me? Yeah, take it, done. But here it's like, you don't have a face mask, man, we got to figure it out now. You know, we don't have enough supply. And you would see Hong Kongers kind of helping each other out. You see business people investing in face mask machines, right? Trying to find that. People sourcing all over the world. I have friends who would be messaging me, hey, man, are you good? We need to. I went on Amazon and like ordered whatever I could for my friends as well.
Yeah.
So people were doing whatever they could. And it wasn't a matter of like, hey, I got mine, man, don't look at me. But it's like, dude, this is real. My friend could
but
be in trouble.
But it also was not a period of time when the rest of the world was trying to get them at the same time.
And that's why we kind of had the advantage. So while we were sourcing it away from certain places, we got a hold of the face mask.
Because this was January.
Yeah.
This was like early January.
Exactly. And everyone else, everywhere else is thinking, this is great business. I'm selling better than ever. This is fantastic.
And they needed them back in the end.
Yeah, exactly right. So unfortunately
China bought 500 million masks from foreign countries in the early months of this year.
Yeah. And so,
I think in January it was.
Probably when it all started going crazy. But yeah, I think that's the biggest difference, the speed of getting into it and the willingness to stick with it.
And the thing is that it worked.
Yeah.
It never got out of control. They got in a little bit and it stayed in a reasonable level and things were okay. And in fact, we never, until later on, for quite some time, we weren't required to close. We closed because our parent company is cautious.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the comedy club now.
Yeah. You mean the one on the 8th floor of California Tower here in Lan Kwai Fong?
The one with the riff.hk website? You know? Yeah. I mean, you can look at our social media, Instagram, Facebook. Anyway,
So the parent company was a bit cautious.
They were cautious, so they shut us down.
Yeah.
But we didn't need to. But then here's what happened is that you had cases in Taiwan and mainland China and Hong Kong. But you didn't have them anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so they left the door open to people flying back.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was in Australia flying back when this happened. So what happened was suddenly, Italy was a mess. The UK was a mess.
Yeah.
France was a mess. US was not a mess at that point.
Yeah.
And all these people went, oh my God, Hong Kong's better than where I am, and flew back.
Now this, if it pisses anyone off, I'm very sorry to say, but this is what pisses me off the most. There was a bunch of people that when it first started hitting big in Hong Kong, they're like, I'm out. I'm out of here. I'm going away. I'm going to, let's say, here or there, wherever. And when it was bad there, they come back. And I'm like, dude, you don't go run away. And when you're dirty, you come back and you mess things up for us again, right?
Nice to meet you. My name's
Andy. No, but you didn't run away when it first started.
No,
you were already away.
Yeah,
so that's it. I'm talking about the guys who were like, oh, in January, I'm out of here, man. Right? And then like in March, they're like, hey, guys, I just want to say nice, good to be back.
But the really messy thing is they should have known that they posed a risk.
Yeah.
And I know people that came back at that time and just self-quarantined.
Yeah.
But some people went out. And there was this one girl, she went out to 5 different nightclubs.
Oh, dude.
She went to a kebab store. They did a list where they'd been. She was at a kebab store at 2 a.m. Then she got up and went out again the next day. And I'm like, first of all.
Yeah.
You sound like you're fun.
Yeah, exactly. Like, please give me your number. Yeah. No. I respect the guys who, look, if you went away out of fear, whatever, and came back, as much as I am upset, but I do respect you when you quarantine yourself.
It's shit. If they quarantine themselves.
Then I'm like, look, I respect that. All right. You knew this is, everyone makes mistakes, whatever, and you had to come back for safety. I get it. We're all human beings. But that, and there's been many, many cases of people you're going out with their little wristbands, walking around town, thinking they're all cool. There were cases of people posting on social media like, ha ha ha, look at this silly wristband, cutting it up and dumping it down, and everyone was like, really, dude, like, this is not a cool
thing.
What's
wrong with people?
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing licking toilet seats, it's another cutting your wristband and, you know, going around town.
You were doing that?
No, that was apparently the thing. That was apparently like a TikTok challenge or something.
Oh my god. So that's not a post-COVID game you want to play.
That's a universal issue.
So what that did was that made the problem real for the first time.
Yes.
Like, it was like, oh shit. That's when they got up to, there was, I think, 81 in one day, 80 new cases in one day. And the number of cases looked like it might start going up. But Hong Kong people, they brought the force.
Yeah, they got the job done. They're like,
that's when the bars got shut down. Restaurants stayed open. It was really just the bars. And I think the bars got targeted because it was so many people had just gone out and partied and spread it.
Yeah. What's bizarre, though, you would see actually people in bars in, let's say, February and March and stuff and just hanging like it's no big deal. And I was like, all right, good for you guys, whatever, but I really hope things are good. And I think what happened was when that one case that started happening in a certain bar district, and then I was gonna let you say it and be like, yeah, you know the place where they have California Tower on
here? You talking about here? This place we're in right now?
Exactly. And then that's when everyone started freaking out, like, oh, it's on, right?
Because we were open for 3 weeks when our company said it's safe between it becoming mandatory to shut down. And the first 2 weekends slammed. You remember those shows?
I remember,
great shows.
Yeah, people were like,
so excited to be out. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And then by the third week when the cases had gone up a little bit, no one came. People bought tickets and they didn't come.
Yeah, and they wouldn't even ask for refunds, right? They're like, look,
I told Muhammad, I was like, just offer him like tickets to another show or something.
People were just like, look, it doesn't matter. I play
safe. Just don't risk it.
Yeah, not going to risk it. And the funny thing, even gyms, man, the gym I go to, well, not that particular branch, but one of their branches had a case. And the gym started going like, oh, we're going to close the branch and everything. And I'm like, oh, I need my workout. And then that happened. Then gym started closing for I don't know how many weeks it's been. Beauty parlors, people were being ugly.
Well, one of the gyms didn't take very good precaution. They knew they had someone infected in their venue and they just finished the day. They let more people come in.
Damn.
So I think that's why the government, I think there was a punitive aspect to targeting the bars and the gyms.
Yeah.
Because bars aren't necessarily that much worse than some other places that were still open.
Yeah.
But life was still pretty normal. You could go out, you go to parks, you go hiking. Like, we're never required to be at home unless you were, you know, sick or quarantined or whatever. And
wouldn't you say it was like a certain...
And the travel ban came in.
Yeah.
They say if you land here, you have to have a wristband that shows you're in your house for 2 weeks. And then soon after that, only residents can land, and that's still in place now.
Yeah.
Everyone who lands gets tested.
Yeah.
And even if you test negative, you still have to self-quarantine.
Yeah,
you still got to quarantine with the wristband for 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that as well. So those measures and
so they shut the door. They left the door open.
Yeah.
And they shut it.
Let's just say, good thing it's not Christmas, man. Santa Claus would have had a tough time going through those chimneys or houses. He was like, can I come in? Ho, ho, ho. No.
Who's got a chimney in Hong Kong?
Oh, you have not visited the rich places in Hong Kong.
Yeah, okay, fair. I don't even think about it.
They probably have like just the chimney just for Santa Claus every year.
They
never
probably have
use
a chimney
ever.
Bigger than my apartment.
Yeah, I think so too. Right. Now, so I think what's happened with Hong Kong is like the fast response from the experience and also the confidence level. Like, let's put it this way. I'm pretty confident now that we've like found out there's apparently one case or something, I'm pretty sure everyone's going to just raise their guard up like, bam, like, no, we're going to stomp.
So there's
a
case now.
Yeah,
there's just one. This week, we didn't have any cases for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And there's one local case has turned up.
Exactly. So everyone's just going to be like, all right, man, we're not letting this affect us. We're going to be on our tip-top guard condition, and we're going to somehow work this out, find the source, whatever, and then stomp it out and continue life. Because that's the thing in Hong Kong, like, there's only so long that we're willing to be stuck in one place and not, you know, fix it. We're like, let's get the job done. I need to go to school. I need my kids to be in school. I need to go to work. Right? This house doesn't pay itself. I need to one day own a chimney.
Like, to back in Melbourne, people are like, well, I want to play golf. I wish I was joking.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Seriously.
Man. That's the thing. Actually, I read somewhere where there was like some cruise ship that was quarantined and they were told to stay in their rooms and everyone just went to the pool to play. And I'm like, guys, like, how
do
are
you? Do you know that sales for cruise ships next year are at record highs?
Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Like, after all these people are like, you know what? I'm going to fight fire with fire.
I'm serious.
Oh, man. Okay, you know what? Humanity always defies expectation. We're, you know, shoot for the moon. Nothing's impossible. Shoot for the stars, you know, that kind of thing. Well, good for them. Hey, I tell you what, if it makes you happy, then sail away.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I never put much salt in the judgment of someone who would choose to be on a cruise ship any time.
Yeah, true.
Now or not.
Yeah, true. Regardless of
situation.
You
failed the first test.
Yeah. You said what? You chose to go on the cruise ship? You mean you don't work on it? It was voluntary? You pay? Okay, you know what?
Did you know that there are cruise ships, like there's a Backstreet Boys cruise ship where the Backstreet Boys are on there? And it's all Backstreet Boys related activities.
Are you serious?
Shows. Yeah, yeah. There's a New Kids on the Block one.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a Kiss one. There are Kiss cruise ships.
Okay, Kiss, I can understand. That was like imagine the Backstreet Boys, like, what, you order your steak and they're like, how would you like it? You're like, I want it that way.
No, you didn't do that. Can I tell you a funny story? So yeah, my wife's dad doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
Only speaks Russian. He was, the only word he's ever said in English was he was sitting in front of the television watching the news after work. And they're all there. And just out of nowhere, he goes, everybody.
Oh, man.
And they all turn around like,
like, yes?
What?
He's like, move your body.
No, he never spoke English again. That was it. He bailed.
Hey, Backstreet Boys have some contribution to society, all right? Someone's learning English and being able to tell people to move their bodies.
Yeah.
Making sure it's everyone included. Right.
They're also doing us a favor by taking a bunch of psychopaths off the land, putting them on a boat.
Yeah, thank
that
God.
Hopefully hits an iceberg. Yeah.
Wow, good for them. Good for them, man. You know, if you have a Backstreet Boys cruise ship, that's an experience.
How serious would the security
of a fan? Yeah.
They need on them? That to be on a boat full of people that just want a little bit of their hair.
Yeah. Well, it'd be weird.
Just a lock.
Well, I'm looking at the age group as well. Like, their fan base would be someone like my age.
Yeah.
40-year-old people go like, oh, my God, it's a measure.
I want it this way.
Yeah.
No, I want it that way. Yeah. Just imagine you go to sleep at night and there's just some crazy woman with her face up against the porthole.
Yeah, exactly.
Little round window.
Wow, anything's possible. You see, people, this is the encouraging message we want to give you. Here in Hong Kong, we're trying to fight a disease. Where else? Everywhere else in the world, people are making things happen. You know, things you thought could never happen. You would have never expected 1 year ago that we'd all be wearing face masks, fighting diseases together.
Oh my God. You know,
and 1 year later, someone's going to have that booked cruise ship. They're going to be looking at Backstreet Boys.
I saw a funny joke the other day. It said, me in January, 2020 is going to be my year, and it's me in April, and it just says, wipes ass with expired tortilla.
Yeah, no more tissue paper, man. Oh, I'm telling you, you never know.
What's been pretty amazing for me is the to be able to open as a venue, and also the planning for doing shows and stuff. The measures are blowing people away. Like, yeah. Let me tell you some of the stuff.
Yeah, but you're following the rules.
Yeah, well, I think most people are. any franchise places are.
Yeah,
like if you go to places like Pret a Porter or you know, these places that have multiple venues that could be affected.
Yeah. Maybe Pret a Manger, you mean that sandwich place.
What did I say?
Pret a Porter.
What's Pret a Porter?
I think that's like a movie or something.
Oh God. I mean Pret a Manger. You can tell my French isn't that sharp.
Oh, wee wee. Wee wee is terrible.
You know that bakery Eiffel Tower? anyway, there's my credibility shot. No, but like, so we've had to, let me tell you some of the stuff we've done. We've had to have, so when you walk in California Tower, they have security cameras that will scan your temperature and you will not get in the building, like, as you walk in front of the camera outside.
Yeah.
You won't even get in, they have your temperature already. It's incredible. Yeah. And then also,
what if you're really hot?
It works. Go and watch it. Okay. Yeah, everyone's blowing through at 36.5. You know, right. I've stood there and just watched groups of people come in. It's terrifyingly healthy. Effective.
Okay, all right, good for them.
We've had to change like the AC. It's now 100% air intake from outside, so you don't have any circulation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not allowed to have. You got 50% capacity restrictions. 1.5 meters between every table. 4 people at a table in the comedy room. Everyone, audience, comedian, have to wear a face mask.
Woo! Wow! So much for comics who use facial expressions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
No more smiling.
Man. You know who will win? Deadpan comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this is their time to shine.
Yeah. It's Stephen Wright.
He was one step ahead of the world all along. He's like, you just wait for that day.
Just wait for the plague.
Yeah.
And
wow, these are serious rules.
So much stuff we have to do. Like, here's another one. The staff that collect glasses and from tables are not allowed to touch clean glasses, and the staff that give you your drink are not allowed to touch any glasses that have been touched by a customer.
Wow.
So there's a contamination separation going on in the staffing.
Yeah.
And then there's the PPE, you know, the gloves and masks.
Yeah.
And then everything's getting wiped down. So they do this spray. The whole of California sprayed the whole building. This, like, there's this disinfectant that gets activated by light and it lasts like 6 months.
Yeah.
And then at night, they're installing UVC lights that disinfect the venue overnight. It's just crazy.
Well, first of all, to all our listeners who are listening, we're actually sitting at the Riff stage, and on the stage there's like this big neon sign of the word "the Riff" in like blue neon color, and I feel like we're getting UV UV rays.
Like,
I feel my right side closer to the lights very clean. My left side terrible.
Just and I also have cancer now. So
it's a win-win. Okay, so the measures are really serious. Then you have
to. And here's the thing is like. Certainly for us as a company that is, you know, runs venues worldwide, is they're looking at Asia to learn how to deal with it.
Yeah.
So there's so many, we have to do so much reporting so people can go, is it effective? And it's not just about keeping your venue safe, although that's primarily what it's about. It's also about making people feel comfortable and understand that you care and that you are. Like sometimes maybe disinfecting the tables is the most important thing from a contamination point of view, right? But people won't notice it that much because you normally wipe down tables, but they'll notice UV lights or something. And it's about making people understand that you're doing
the impression.
You're doing the, you know, the 99% or whatever to really make it safe.
Yeah, I think it's very true because like when you come into a room, I mean a comedy room in general, you want people to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Right? If they're just like feeling uncomfortable in general, like the air conditioning's too cold or whatever.
You know, there's an opposing theory to that.
Make them feel awkward.
So David Letterman, he would have his show always at like very cold, like too cold that people would have to wear jackets even in the summer.
Yeah.
Because they think that... a comfortable audience won't laugh as much.
Huh.
And we've always subscribed to that.
Well, thanks to this virus, we can put that to the test. We can like see what it's like.
They're very uncomfortable.
Sir, I need to scan you every two jokes.
But I think temperature is, yeah, but I think temperature is a specific thing where, like, because you know, if it gets too hot, it's terrible for a show.
Oh, yeah.
People get, they start
the comics
to
are sweating. But
the audience starts to get sleepy.
Yeah, they get tired.
Yeah. And they sort of slouch and then up big laughs, which you're a bit cold.
Yeah. Survival, man. You're trying to survive. You're like, oh, man, I got to stay awake. If I fall asleep, it's over. I'm gone.
Yeah, I'll be dead.
Oh, man. Okay, so just to let you know, the comedy room actually is a very comfortable temperature right now. We're both, you know, sitting comfortably. We're not cold or hot. And we're getting UV lighting disinfectant.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't just trying to talk about what's great about our venue, but for me, it's a benchmark of the measures. Like, it's not... Now that I'm aware of what's being done, I'm seeing it everywhere else. Oh, another one.
Yeah.
You have to make a declaration before you come in our venue.
The people coming in, right?
Everyone.
The audience.
So we have a record of everyone that's coming in, and they have to... They have to fill out a form that confirms they haven't traveled within 2 weeks.
They're like, I do declare.
But they have to say with a southern accent.
Yeah. I've not been out of the territory.
They have to wear suspenders. So they have to say that they haven't had any symptoms in 14 days. They haven't interacted with someone suspected of having COVID. And, you know, the declarations I've seen in a bunch of places. Aftermath had something similar.
Yeah. I mean, here, even my gym, every day. Like, if I go to the gym and I declare yesterday and I go today, they're like, no, declare again. I'm like, but I came to the gym yesterday. I declared I didn't go anywhere outside of Hong Kong yesterday. They're like, yeah, but
yeah,
you
and this is a day later.
Yeah, and they're like, no, declare again. I'm like, all right, I do declare.
Dude, how much in Hong Kong is it like, once people have a system for something, the deviation to the system, you try and bring in reason, they're just like, it's like pouring a glass of water on a robot's head.
Yeah, it's like, no. And I guarantee this declaration is going to be part of life now.
Yeah.
The temperature check is going to be part of life now. You know, eventually, just a matter of time, it's like, you didn't check my temperature. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. It's kind of like, you know, go to a restaurant, they give you a glass of water. It's like natural. Here, it's like, can you check my temperature, please?
Well, it's interesting you say that because we've been very observant. Oh, one other thing while I think of it, cashless. We're trying to get 100% to cashless, which is really hard in this city.
By that, you don't mean everything's free. You mean just don't pay with actual cash.
Yeah, no, we have to take limbs. People have to cut off body parts. Yeah, I mean, we're not using physical cash. So the thing we're really paying attention to is, are people comfortable with it? Like, are we imposing on them? And there is a balance. It's like, is it too expensive? Is it too imposing? Is it effective? And man, people are so just like, oh, tell you where I've been, tell you where I've flown, I'll wear a mask, you know, all of that.
I think it's a Hong Kong thing for sure.
I wonder.
Yeah.
The expats are okay with it as well.
Because I think over time, also seeing in Europe the issues that are going on there, they're like, you know what? I think this is real. Like, I'll be very honest with you. Until issues like, you know, Boris Johnson testing positive and Italy going out of control, a lot of expats are like, yeah, no, I'm not wearing a mask. Now it's like, oh, I could consider this.
Yeah, I couldn't help but get a bit angry when I saw expats not wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And I think part of it was the fact that the second wave, which was the most serious part of the story,
the people
was
coming
brought
back,
by
right?
foreigners.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really amazing to me that Hong Kong people, I know there was a little bit of animosity, but there was very limited animosity against foreigners.
Yeah.
And anywhere else, I mean, in mainland China, they would be beating them in the street.
Yeah.
In fact, they are very anti-foreigners, despite the fact the foreigners have barely brought the virus in.
Wasn't there the news article, the thing about in Guangzhou, like McDonald's were banning African people from going
in? It wasn't McDonald's. It was everything.
Yeah. I read
people
a lot about
getting
that.
People were getting kicked out of their apartments
because they were afraid that I don't know where you're coming from
and they have
or
to sleep in the street.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
Yeah, and just in general, foreigners are being treated poorly because the news there, it publishes that there are imported cases, but what it doesn't publish is that like 95% of them are Chinese people returning.
Yeah. Yeah, so people just jump
so
to the conclusion.
So people are like, imported cases, it's all these foreigners, we got to get rid of them.
You're imported? Oh, this beer is imported. Kick it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think...
But the Hong Kong people, I saw...
I think that's
very limited animosity against foreigners.
Because I think Hong Kong is also about effectiveness, really. Like, you know, me being pissed off at you won't really kill the disease or the virus, you know. So at this moment, I don't like you, but I'm going to deal with this first. Look, it's that's the thing. I mean, put it this way. If it wasn't for the virus, the protests and everything would still be going very strong, whether it's cold or hot. But because we got the virus to deal with, we got a bigger problem to take care of
first. So the protests stopped the virus?
Well, the virus kind of temporarily put the protests on a halt. And the protests kind of united everyone together. So when the virus hit us, we were all more united to help each other out. Before, we wouldn't be so connected. Now we were like, dude, you're one of us, man. We need every one of you guys. I think that spirit of each of every one of us belongs in Hong Kong was there thanks to the protests. And then the virus was a real test of like, put your money where your mouth is. You know, are you really going to help everyone out that you consider a Hong Konger? And people are like, yeah, fine. You know, I have a mask. You need a mask. And honestly, what was beautiful was in like, you know, late January with Chinese New Year when everything started going crazy. And then February, you would have people messaging you like, hey, you need a mask. And there was a running joke where anybody who talks about masks online, everyone's comments would say 2 boxes, please. And that was it. And it was like 2 boxes, THX, thanks, right? So that was a running joke because it's like, you have a mask, I need 2 boxes. You have a mask, I need 2 boxes. Like, guys, I just
said. But when you say mentioning a mask, like what kind of mention?
A box. Like, oh, please make sure you wear a mask. 2 boxes, please.
Oh, yeah,
2 boxes.
There you go. That's great. That's funny. Yeah. I like that.
And you would have everyone comment on it. It was just like a running insider joke in Hong Kong. But then people were willing to help each other. I actually had friends messaging me, hey, man, are you all right? I have a box mask. I can give you maybe 10. Is your family cool? You know? And then like I would message my friends, hey, I got 1 box in my hands. If you guys ever need, let me know. I could pass 5 to you guys temporarily. And you would have so many organizations going to different districts. There were organizations that contacted me saying, hey, can we do something, you know, like maybe do a show or whatever and raise some funds so we can buy some masks. You know, can you talk to the ethnic minority community? It was beautiful in that way. But I think ultimately I would say I'm good. The virus can go now. I think we're good.
Yeah, I my wife is from Russia and her family's there, and Russia's about to become number 2 behind the US for the worst in the world.
Really?
Yeah, it's getting really bad there. They're over 10,000 cases a day, new cases a day.
Man.
And we're like, you know, her auntie is knitting face masks.
Yeah.
Or sewing.
Just putting something together. Like,
and we're like, should we send them out there? You know, I don't even know how to do
that. It's weird, man. I mean, like, I actually mailed my sister in England some masks. And I sent it to her because I was like, I have a box. Look, just take it. Have it with yourself. Should you need it, your friends need it. At least you have a box there, right?
2 boxes, please.
Yeah, exactly. She didn't know that joke yet. Phew, mailing is expensive. So I think really this is a real test of, first of all, humanity. And like sometimes things don't seem serious, but like, look, just be cautious.
You know, there was this great blog from Tim Urban about like tribalism and how we tend to be tribal on the level of the threat that we face.
Yeah.
And the example he gives is like, you can fight with your brother, but then your cousins come over and you and your brother fight your cousins.
Yeah.
And then some strangers come over and you and your brother and your cousins fight the strangers.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like the virus was an opportunity for humanity to unite.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, to take America as an example, the divisions in America, it's amazing how much they've superseded actual like threats to their nation.
Well, that's the thing. So you would notice that actually the division has split us so far apart that it's like, guys, you do realize that this virus is going on. No, well, you know, I'm going to stand by.
The virus isn't a political opinion.
Yeah, it's just happening. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, whatever. It's like, it's just the virus that's going to affect you. No, I'm on this side. All right, whatever. You're good. You know, it's nice knowing you. All right, just make sure my Amazon order ships on time.
So we've got a couple of questions from the podcast group that I would dive into before we finish up. Question number one from my very good friend, Olivier Molody. He said, what's your favorite thing to do during quarantine?
So I actually developed like a whole routine during my day when I was stuck at home. I would have like, you know, morning, read the book, you know, write comedy, then work on this. And like,
did you find it hard to write?
I found it hard to write the way I used to write before.
Sure.
I would write like, you know, general daily life. Oh, that's interesting. Let me mark it down. I work with that. Now it's like, well, my room sucks. I have nothing to talk about.
Have you guys noticed that there's a cockroach in my room?
What's the deal with the right wall? Am I right? It's like, what? Hey, why do we have 4 walls? Why not 5? Huh?
That
was a challenge.
Performing is such an integral part of my writing process that when I couldn't perform, I couldn't write.
Yeah.
Or it was like, you know,
it's like
fairly fruitless.
You would write a bit and then go to open mic and say it once, work it out, go back and kind of review it in your head, maybe change it a bit and go back to open mic and try again, maybe add a little bit on stage. And without that, it's like, oh, well, let me write this on a sheet of paper now and then pretend, maybe visualize. So then I started like
see
looking
if
at
my cat likes it.
Yeah, exactly. The cat said meow. I'm like, well, that sounded like a huh.
Yeah. Yeah, was that like a supportive meow, or did you meow just because you thought it was funny?
Well, my cat had her tail up, so I think that's a good sign, right? So I think then I try to look at other writing techniques that you could use just to kind of bend your mind a little bit more rather than expect for inspiration through daily life. And that kind of changed a bit. So yeah, my daily writing routines and habits have changed, where it used to be every day go out, look for interesting stuff, mark it down, come back and kind of look at the interesting notes that I wrote down and work on that, to, all right, so I'm going to just find a random topic and use different angles to look at it and play with it and see, could I create a scenario out of it? And what's my closest reference I have of it? So for example, one of the recent ones I was about, you know, going to the movies. I haven't been to the movies in ages, right? So I was like, okay, let me think back to all the movie experiences I've had. And, you know, was it interesting? Was it funny? And I was just remembering the last movie I watched in the cinema was Joker. And
that was a terrifying movie to watch.
That was
in the
great.
Cinema.
Yeah. I loved it, man. You know? So then I remember, cause I wanted to keep the ticket stub. So I was really afraid that the usher at the entrance was going to rip my ticket stub and ruin it. So I pre-ripped it. And I gave them the side that they're supposed to keep. And the lady's like, why did you rip it? I said, no, I just want to make sure this side is mint condition. She's like, I'm a professional. And I was like, I'm not denying that.
Also,
I'm
just, I don't know you.
Yeah, did I not do your job for you for free? Why are you pissed off at me for that?
That's funny.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, well, that was an interesting experience. I just never wrote it down because I was so busy watching the movie. But I was like, oh, it's jogging my memory. So that way I'm kind of having a virtual walk through my life again and hopefully getting inspiration there. Yourself, I mean, without the stage.
You know what I did? And this is the thing that I enjoyed the most, is I channeled that lack of being able to write into kicking off a bunch of projects that I had not gotten to.
Yeah.
You know?
I think same, yeah.
Like online stuff. Like the podcast is partially
a
function of that.
Yeah.
The Mama Hoo Hoo, which we've done for years, is like I started
online videos.
Filming in Hong Kong, and we've had a video out every week for like a bunch of weeks now.
Yeah.
And a few other things I've you know, I just never got around to, is it gives you that time to be like, all right, I've got a little bit more time at home than I had before. What can I get going? And I enjoy that a lot. And I try to do it in a way when things get going as they are now, that I'll be able to have that momentum to keep going.
I think that is the true test of a good performer / comedian. Like, you got to know how to evolve with the times. Same with yourself. I mean, some of my projects I always wanted to do was, like, let's say I have a Facebook Live show and stuff like that, which I started, and I'm like, hey, this is pretty happening now for me.
So must be going better now during the virus.
Yeah? Oh, definitely. I mean, it was the best time was during Easter weekend. Everyone's locked up at home. It was a long weekend, and everyone's watching the show. I'm like, this is great. Yeah, so I've been doing it, and it's become a habit now. So like you said, the challenge was not just to do it during the quarantine or whatever. It was to be able to sustain it, even after things restart. And I've kind of got a routine. So like my writing and everything, I think I will implement this into my daily life, even if things go back to normal.
Yeah, so I think that's all that we can really comment on for now. But the situation's changing here very quickly.
Breaking news every day.
Yeah, and you know, I just thought it would be a good chance. We thought it would be a good chance to give you guys an update, you know, on what's happened. And, you know, as things, this is one of the first cities in the world to be opening up properly.
Yeah.
That should be opening up.
Yeah.
And man, I hope that one case doesn't turn into anything.
Just look away when you cough. Look away when you cough, okay? Yeah, we'll see. We'll update you soon.